This show was first broadcast on Free FM 89.0, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access radio station. For more information on our station and our wide range of programs, visit freefm.org.nz. Podcasting. It's easier than you think, and Free FM has everything you need, from help with initial planning right through to hosting and delivery across popular podcast platforms. Our content creators are just ordinary people delivering engaging weekly podcasts and radio shows on all sorts of issues that affect them, their communities, and our society. We're really keen to support new content by, for, and about a wide range of community groups and issues. Interested? Go to freefm.org.nz or see our Facebook page to find out more.
Welcome to Free Choice 2019, Mark Bunting for Hamilton East.
Thank you very much. Hello, Kelly.
Tell us a bit about yourself and why you're standing.
Well, I'm a first-term councillor. I've just done a year, and after much ado, I thought, right, I need to finish what I've started, really. And it's a heck of a hard job, but I've absolutely loved the challenge. And so I think, you know, if I don't get back there and finish some of the stuff I've started, it may fall over.
It'll fall over if you're not back in.
Well, okay, that sounds a bit arrogant, doesn't it? But you put it, well, the thing is, you put a lot of energy into your the things you're passionate about. So in my case, it's become cycleways and alternative modes of transport, and I have a very clear vision for a Hamilton that's easy to get around into the future. But, you know, I've made some really good progress with some great relationships with staff. We've started to get stuff done, and I'm worried that if there's not me or other people who are into that sort of thing, then it's a very easy thing to pull the pin on, and we could end up 5 years back again.
We are going to talk about your priorities a little bit in a moment, but I mean, you've mentioned that it was your first term. How did you find that compared to what you expected it to be like?
Oh man, not what I expected at all. Look, I'd served on the Well Trust for 14 years beforehand, so I knew governance. So I got what it was going to be like at the table, but I was absolutely not prepared for the difference between having a career in media and in politics. And I think it was Oprah said, if you want to get rid of 50% of your love base, go into politics straight away. Okay. Because instantly the way people treat you is quite different. So I wasn't prepared for that. And it took me a year at least to realise I wasn't there to get jokes. I wasn't there to be funny. I was there to actually be a counsellor, really, and the community has a different expectation on you.
And why do you think we're so hard on politicians?
I don't know.
Do we just love to hate them?
Yeah, it's a national sport, really, picking off councillors and politicians, really. I think some of the carry-on I've seen lately reinforces why people don't trust them, to be honest. The fact that it's an interesting thing. When you're in there, you don't actually have a boss. And so you actually answer to no one. And so suddenly a lot of people are inclined to behave very schoolyard in that situation, because it's all about profile and sound bites and the likes. And to me, I've kind of done the profile, I've done the sound bites. I just want to get in and do the work. But you can just see all the shenanigans going on around you. So I guess it's a little bit silly sometimes.
So I do want to talk about perhaps three of the priorities, if you're re-elected, that you'd really focus on. And you did touch on the bike plan. So what work have you done in that space?
I've worked very hard on, first of all, I got hold of the bike plan and found out that none of the cycle lanes actually connect to each other. So there's been some great work done, like the Western Rail Trail is formidable, and big ups to the people who did that. Same with the Wairere Ring Road, etc. But the fact is, you can't get from track to track without taking your life into your hands and trying to get across five crossroads or playing Frogger with traffic. So connectivity has been a big one. So you may have seen the Claudelands Bridge work. I'm really proud to have sort of nudged that along.
And so what's the idea behind that?
Well, there was no real safe way to get across the river on a bike. It's as simple as that. You could go across Pukete Bridge if you want to, but it's not much use to if you live in Hillcrest.
Yeah, a bit of a detour.
Yeah, and so the idea of that was to make a good shared cycle lane, because for years people have been banging on about another bridge across the river for bikes or a route between town and Claudelands. I thought, you know what? A gentleman by the name of Marcus Brown came in and submitted, and he had this really cool idea. He said, why don't you do this with the Claudelands Bridge, and that's close one lane off for traffic in the morning and then the other lane in the evening and make it a cycle-friendly road. And we looked at the numbers on that, but I thought, gee, that instills something in my head. I thought, that is the logical and obvious bridge to get across. And so we've come up with a really cool Sharrowed thing. I went down south and had a look at Christchurch. Oh, Sharrowed. Sharrowed's, you're about to see the year of the Sharrow. It's a shared arrow. So it's basically where cars and bikes share the lane. So,
which sounds terrifying to me.
Not if you slow the speed down. And it works extremely well all around the world, where cars have the expectation that they have the same rights as bikes. So a bike will quite safely take the lane. So if you're pedalling across Claudon's Bridge, the road will be slowed by speed humps down to 30 k's an hour, and then you'll be able to bike as if you were in a car with the same priority and the same safety. And yeah, it's a model we're going to use all over town. So this is a really good re-educative campaign for that.
So has this been done anywhere else in New Zealand? You mentioned overseas.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Christchurch is fantastic for it. If you get a chance to have a look down there, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars on their cycle infrastructure, and they made that decision years ago that that's what they were going to do. And they did a beautiful job. So there's, what they've done is they've got these streets. They went to all the residents and said, look, we need to make this into one of our major cycle highways. Would you rather lose some car parks or lose some speed? Now, suburban streets, everyone wants their speed slowed down. So they said, oh, we'll please slow our speed down. And they beautify the streets. They put islands and curbs and trees and all sorts of stuff. And there's this amazing shared route right across from one side of Christchurch to the other. And you don't see a single cycle lane. It's fantastic. So it works very, very well there. Dunedin's done it very badly. They've got their engineers to say, bam, here's where your cycle lanes are going. Put some great big concrete curb and channeling in and annoyed everybody in the process.
But, I mean, putting in a sharrow, whatever you want to call it, across the Claudon's Bridge, that might have attracted a little bit of negative attention for you.
But where else are bikes going to get across? I think the benefits well and truly outweigh the costs in this situation. I'm really prepared to put my neck on the line for this one. And plus, you know, how else are we going to get bikes across? We can't afford a bridge. We can't afford clip-ons. Let's just bite the bullet. Because the thing is, too, down Victoria Street, it's the same speed. So we can sharrow that next as well. And it'll be so much easier to bike down there. In fact, down Victoria Street from Claudon's Bridge to Hood Street is actually some of the safest riding in town because it's so slow and so narrow.
Year of the Sharrow.
Year of the Sharrow.
What other priorities are you really hoping to work on if really?
Well, I'm really excited to see the new domestic waste thing go in, because I was leading the task force when we signed the contract and we rewrote the waste minimisation plan. It's a side of life I never thought I'd fall in love with. Funny thing was, I used to talk rubbish on the, you know, for a living, and now I talk rubbish for a living. But it's real rubbish. I think we can do a lot more though, because domestic, I mean, I think it's a brilliant system we're going to have with the wheelie bins and the curbside separation, but that's only accounting for 13% of our waste. I think, you know, that means that is, do the maths, 87% of our waste is still unaccounted for and going into landfill or wherever
it wants to go. And the council currently focused on figuring out where that is and what to do about it?
Well, what we need to do is we need to get data. And at the moment, there's no way of finding out. So what our team are trying to work with the construction and demolition team is on how to get some sort of voluntary regulation going. And it doesn't mean to say we tut, tut, tut and tell you how much you can take and where you can take it. It's just, please let us know what you do. Once we've got the data, then we can start to pull some levers. But I think we're not working nearly enough in the reuse or the reconstituting of materials stuff. Like, for example, it's a natural fit, isn't it? If you're going to put concrete cycle lanes places and people are throwing a lot of concrete into the earth.
Seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you've touched on cycling and waste minimisation. When you started your term, were these things that you were sort of thinking would be your project?
Actually, no. No, I looked at my little pledge card from last time. Community gardens was big to me because I could see, and believe me, I mean, look at me. I don't look like a cyclist, right? You do not want to see this in spandex, okay? And so, but I can see how good it is for a community. Community gardening was another one. I'm a terrible gardener, but I can see how good a community garden can work for a community. Yes, it's food providing and teaching kids, etc., but it's bringing people together. So I'm still belting along on that. Marketing Hamilton to Hamilton. Well, I think I can only do that by decent behaviour and supporting the comms team. What else was that? Oh, Hambassadors, which is not yet taken off, but it will. It's the ambassador scheme started. This is where we turn the parking wardens into ambassadors. I saw the 2 hours free parking as a part of that, as the first step into that. So that's my cunning plan. They just don't know they're all working to it. So, no, I never thought of rubbish and recycling, because I thought rubbish was just the stuff you put in the bin.
You never know what you can learn. One of the things that you talked about in your last campaign was up, not out. So that sort of brings us into growth being the major challenge, and what are we going to do about that? Yeah. What are your thoughts on the current council's approach to growth?
Look, I get the fact that Mayor Andrew campaigned on growth. right? And growth was going to happen. So I think we have made some hard calls and put a lot more. That's what the rates pump was about, was getting ourselves ready to put the big pipes and the big roads in and opening up Peacock. I was, I think, the only councillor who voted against Peacock because I have this vision of a big high centre. Mm. And, you know, what we've actually done that no one's actually talked about is we've got rid of, we used to have a height regulation of 30 metres, mm. right? Now it's as high as you want. You want to go to the sky, you do it, as long as you can mitigate the shade. So that's going to encourage that. So I also think our infill is wrong. I think we've got infill wherever we want to have infill. They talk about this 50% infill. I personally hate the fact you've got these beautiful old houses with a condo behind them. It's awful, and it's not good for the infrastructure. It's tough on the sewage. It's tough on the roads. So I think we need to manage that and say, listen, we're going to put our infill closer to the centre of town, and we're going to leave the outskirts with a bit of space now, and we're just going to concentrate on some really good quality, high-density, well-served infrastructure in the centre of town, because there's a big market for cool apartments.
And so what you know about the Peacock development, do you think they're utilising that as an opportunity to do things differently, or do you think we're going to see the carbon copy of Rototuna?
No, I certainly don't. Not while my bottom points to the ground. No way. It's and that's what I'm loving about having an interest in waste and in transport, is that now I've thought, right, okay, lost that one. It's going to happen. Let's make the best of it. So we're talking about putting cycling infrastructure in, public transport infrastructure, before we put car infrastructure in. So we're really running hard to beat the developers to put in these cool cycle lanes. Like, for example, we want to put a cycle lane that goes all the way down and actually doesn't go across, goes down and around and joins up with the end of Cobham Drive, you know, where that cycle lane is there. And we make that one of the main routes from there into town. You know, so if you want to live in Peacocks, it's actually easier to be on a bike than it is in a car.
Mm, I did see the plan for that, which is new.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. So I guess we've heard a lot, I guess, in this election campaign about affordable housing. Is there such a thing, and what can the council do? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the thing that gets me about the affordable housing thing is everyone thinks that the only way to live somewhere is to buy a house. You know, we need to be looking at the rental markets. I think we can be making things easier for landlords to be landlords, basically, easing up on them on some of the rates demands we're putting on them at the moment, so they can ease the pressure on their tenants. Because first of all, I mean, our tenant base is huge, about 40% and 50% of people down are tenants. And if we're trying to attract labour, they're not going to want to buy a house straight away, especially if it's new labour or young labour. So I think that's a neglected part of this affordable housing thing. I don't buy the crap that says we'd put in more houses and all of a sudden everything gets cheaper. Nah, it's not true.
So we could be a bit more innovative in how we
have to be.
How we do that. I mean, I guess anywhere you go, you're going to hear about the pressure that a rates increase put on the residents in Hamilton. Do you think it was necessary?
Yeah, I do, sadly. I do. Look, believe me, it was a very long, long, long series of meetings. Of very long meetings.
12-hour midnight meetings.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what you're paid to do. Yep. You know, I don't buy this. Oh, we had to work so long. Well, we had to work so long because there's a city in our hands, you know. You do that. You know, they didn't complain about it during the war, did they? You know, so... yes, it was a hell of a fight, and Andrew came in. Andrew's a salesman, right? So he came in with a starting bid of 16% or whatever it was, and we all chipped away and got it down a bit. And we ended up with something which left the infrastructure with a much healthier state, because the bottom line was the previous council had undertaken to reduce rates, reduce debt, and they came up with, you know, there was Angela and Margaret and Rob and Julie and Leo and all those guys who said 3.8%, that's what we're going to have for the next 10 years. There's some certainty for you. And that, unfortunately, didn't account for the fact the pools needed $14 million to fix them. Founders was falling over. The library was about to shut down. There were something like, I don't know what Andrew says, 24,000 footpath inefficiencies. And so they were all deferred and held back. And so we thought, we've got to pay for those too. So there was that, plus building new infrastructure. But, Hamilton's done that pain now. We've done that pain, and I'm certainly not going to accept another jolt like that.
And do you think that there are ways that the council could increase the number of ways it brings in income?
Big time. Yeah, big time. I know people are against the fuel tax, and in principle I am too. If the fuel tax comes off rates, in other words, if rates are going to go down correspondingly, then I don't see a problem with the fuel tax, to be honest, because road users then are paying for the road. Homeowners aren't paying for the roads. But that's a tough one. Yeah. So, you know, and I certainly don't trust the trust councils to necessarily make that. But yeah, we've got to be hunting it down. Because in America, I mean, they get taxes on, they get some of the GST, as it were. And then again, they have to pay for their own police forces and fire brigades. But
so yeah, it's something that we could look at.
Absolutely.
So we're down to some yes, no questions now.
Right.
First past the post versus STV. Would you vote for a change to STV?
Yes.
Would you vote to keep the Maungai Māori seats?
Yes.
Would you vote for a living wage for staff and contractors?
Definitely for staff, and a procurement policy that says we only hire contractors who pay their own staff.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Are developers paying enough in contributions?
Yes, I think they are.
Should Hamilton City Council have declared a climate emergency?
Yes.
Should we be changing the names of Bryce Von Tempsky and Grey Streets?
I don't know. Oh, do I have to say yes or no?
No, you can say I don't know this.
I don't know.
Mark Bunting for Hamilton East, thanks for joining us on Free Choice 2019.
For more episodes of this Community Access Radio show, please visit freefm.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast possible by funding the Access Internet Radio Project.